Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Almost 60% of U.S. households as of the end of 2006 owned a pet. Most were cats and dogs, but others owned much more unusual pets like tarantulas, hedgehogs, or spider monkeys. Over the years, fads in animal ownership can come and go and in and out of style, kind of like bell-bottom trousers. Must-have pets have run the gamut from alpacas to Zambezi parrotfish. Owning an alternative type of pet can be fun, but can also spell disaster for the animal as well as the owner. Dr. Scott Weldy, a veterinarian who's treated all creatures, great and small, from cheetahs to chimpanzees, will chat with us about the perils, pitfalls, and pleasures of owning some of the more exotic animals on our planet. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Does your dog have problems walking with its back legs? If so, your dog is one of 58 million dogs that suffer with problems with its rear leg. Problems such as spinal myelopathy, arthritis, and hip dysplasia. Bottoms Up Leash helps your dog walk. It's a rear support harness that has won numerous awards such as Dog Fancy's Editor's Choice Award as Product of the Year, and it's been featured on CBS and Good Morning America. Visit the website www.seniorpetsupplies.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggie's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely gulls. Join us every week on Wings and Things and get a bird's eye view of everything there is to know about pet birds and how to make your frequent flyer a happy camper. Wings and Things. That's the way we became the birdie bunch. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Weldy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
I understand right before we got on air that things were a little bit crazy at your practice because you were about to do some surgery. On what?
We have one of the bald eagles babies that was predated off its nest on Santa Cruz Island. We have both of them, but one of them had a fracture that we were going to do surgery on.
And how do you fix this fracture? And is it going to be able to get back into the wild on its own later on?
Well, we're hoping that we can get it back released in the wild. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's a young bird. It's a seven-week-old bird. And if we can get this bird put back together and healed, about the time that this bone will heal, it'll be ready to start fledging off the nest site. So we're going to hack it out on a station, which means we're going to put it in a fake nest and then slowly and basically open it up to the wild and have it fed there. And then the parents hopefully may or may not come in and start reassociating with this bird. The fracture is a fractured humerus, which is the upper arm wing bone. And I have a veterinary surgeon named Jim Feltz that's going to put a little metal external contraption on it to secure the wing until it heals.
And how long do you expect it to take for it to heal?
We're hoping that we can get most of it healed by 3 weeks to 6 weeks, and that's our time frame, because they do heal fast when they're young, and they heal fast because they're birds.
Excellent. So speaking of birds, I know that you have been involved with birds of prey, raptors, for many years. How did you get involved with that?
When I first got out of vet school in 1985, I started working with Marge Gibson in Villa Park. She ran the Orange County Bird of Prey Center. And I just started helping her out. I'd always had an interest in exotic animals and had worked with other birds. And so I ended up doing her veterinary work, and then eventually I just took over the center when she moved back to Wisconsin.
So you've worked with a tremendous number of birds. What other creatures have you worked with also?
I've worked with a number of different animals, from zebras and lions, leopards. I'm the veterinary of record for the exotic feline breeding compound. I work with a couple of private and public zoos in this area. I've had African lungfish. I've done stuff with tarantulas. And as you mentioned earlier, some fish. And then obviously the birds and reptiles, snakes, turtles, tortoises, zebras, pretty porcupines, I don't know, and monkeys, lots of monkeys.
Well, I have to admit, though, I also have DVM after my name like you do. When I got out of veterinary school, I was contacted by somebody wanting to know, what do you do for a sick tarantula? And I had absolutely no idea. Are most veterinarians, I hope, like me, who have no idea, so we have somebody like you to send to, or am I just kind of behind the eight ball and a little slow?
You're definitely not behind the eight ball or a little slow, and I'm not the expert in any one particular area. I know, you know, all of us become familiar with certain things. My expertise is augmented by people who are experts in that area. So when I get a referral for a spider or something like that, I have people that I send these animals to that are experts, or I call and confer with. And so it's not only knowing a lot, it's knowing who to talk to and where to look up the information that makes you good. And as you do it over the years, you get better and better at it.
That must be very hard for somebody. Where you talked, you know, I mentioned in the intro to this segment about, you know, somebody wants to get a hedgehog. It's, you know, something they've seen on TV. They saw it on the internet. Oh, isn't that cute? They can find some pet store that's selling a hedgehog. They know little about it. They take it home. And now what? What is your advice for somebody who wants to get one of these more unique exotic pets?
Well, it is an adventure to own an exotic pet. And probably the things I would look for, the first thing I would do is try to find yourself an exotic animal veterinarian. And first, you know, you can call your regular veterinarian and find out who they use. If you don't have a regular veterinarian, call some of the veterinary hospitals in the local area and ask who they refer to for exotic pets. There are websites for exotics and exotic pet owners that you can check. Sometimes you can get good references on there, and you can also get poor references, and there's no way to police that. But it is imperative that you establish a working relationship with an exotic animal veterinarian prior to needing that veterinarian. And we get calls all the time where people, you know, have had this pet for 7 years and have never been to the vet, and now that the animal is in a critical state because the people spent, you know, the last week trying to nurse it themselves and then the next few days trying to figure out who they could take it to. So, you know, getting your ducks in a row before you get the exotic pet is a very important thing.
What other homework should they do? So, number one, okay, make sure that you find a veterinarian who knows how to handle this species. What are some of the other considerations that people should have? Say they want to get a sugar glider.
Well, they need to know about the legality of it. That's an important thing. You, in certain states and counties and cities and things like that, you can and cannot have certain species of animals. And if you do have those species of animals legally, then you have to follow certain rules and regulations. If you have them illegally, then you run the risk of obviously getting in trouble for them. And there's expense involved with that. there's housing concerns with it, and that's an important thing, and you have to be able to house that animal properly so it doesn't get hurt. It has proper environments, it doesn't get too cold or too hot. You have to understand that when you have a capuchin monkey for a pet, or even a sugar glider or a hedgehog, and somebody gets hurt by that animal or something like that, and you end up going to a human hospital for that, you know, then it becomes a legal problem, because now you've got an animal that you house illegally, and now that animal becomes a risk to you. You know, as far as legalities go, you have lawsuits. You also have to worry about criminal prosecution, and then also the animal is going to be taken from you.
I think a lot of people don't realize that even something as a hybrid dog, so a wolf hybrid, people look at it, it looks like a regular dog, but in reality, that is considered an exotic, and sometimes even just vaccinating them for rabies, you are not legally, as a veterinarian, able to do so, and if that animal were to bite someone, yes, you've opened up a huge Pandora's box. You also mentioned having some primates. You know, people think that having a chimpanzee or having a capuchin monkey would just be so much fun. What's the behavioral aspect for the animal? Forget your own safety, but how about for the animal owning some of these exotics?
Well, you have to mimic their natural environment, and people tend to try to make them into little children. Yeah, your own safety is important, but their safety is also important, and their health is important. And we get them in here because they're being cared for improperly, being fed the wrong diet, being vaccinated when they shouldn't be vaccinated, or things like that. They also get your diseases, the monkeys do. Ferrets get, you know, human influenza virus, and so when people have influenza, their ferret can get it, and vice versa. You know, monkeys can carry tuberculosis. They can get your colds. They can carry a lot of things. Old world monkeys can have herpes B, which can kill you. So there's a lot to take into consideration when you have exotic pets. And like you were talking about with the rabies issue, there are issues with owning these exotic animals and having them be in contact, free contact with humans, and on both sides of the fence. I mean, the animal could hurt himself and the person could get hurt by the animal. And then once that becomes a big mess, then the legal authorities get called in, and then it can get real ugly real fast.
What I find very sad and sometimes very frustrating is, yes, you may see a hedgehog in some movie and think that would be cute and you want to bring it home, and people aren't doing all of their homework that they need beforehand. You go to the pet store and you talk to some of the people there at the pet store, and they go, oh yeah, taking care of this little guy, it's really easy. And you get this, you know, bag of food, and you get, you know, this small cage, and that's all you're going to need to do. Where are some good places where people can get some adequate, good background information, can get their homework done beforehand?
That's a difficult question, because, and I basically would tell you to tell my clients to, depending on what animal they have, I would give them my resources and references that I have and that I use. And there's no one book, that's the first rule. There's no one book that tells you everything about the animal. Most of the books are not refereed, and most of the journals are not. And I try to provide them with either information on it or zoo websites that have information on them and care sheets that have been refereed. So the pet stores may or may not provide you with adequate information on any animal, because some of those people are or are not trained properly. And you may get one guy that's really good and one guy that's not working in the same store. And so it is important that you use the veterinarians that are treating your animals and are theoretically supposed to be the ones with the knowledge or the ability to get the knowledge for you and the information for you. I would use them as your reference source. Natural history on the animals you can acquire through referee, you know, resources. I mean, in my day it was encyclopedias and books written about natural history and by authors that were well known, but nowadays people use the internet, but you have to watch, you know, things. Certain internet websites are not refereed, and they can be changed, and you can have misinformation in this. So you have to know what information source you're looking at.
Well, we've been getting some great information right now from Dr. Scott Weldy, a veterinarian who has treated everything from cheetahs to iguanas. We'll be right back after this short message. See if we can break down the care of different, some of the more common species that we're keeping as our exotic pets. Things like red ears, sliders, and ferrets. So we'll be right back after this short break.
please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pick up something unique at A Bone to Pick Dog Boutique. A Bone to Pick has cool hip fashions for big and small dogs that will have their tails wagging in style. Cat products too. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Check out our eco-friendly pet products and gifts for humans too. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Get your pet's mouth watering monthly with our Gourmet Treat of the Month Club and join A Bone to Pick's free birthday club for your puppy. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Pick up something special for your best friend at A Bone to Pick. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Get 10% off with coupon code PETLIFE.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Thinking about buying a monkey? How about a ferret or a skunk? Then check out the show that will answer the burning questions: where do you get them? What do you feed them? How do you take care of them? And most of all, what were you thinking? With exotic pet expert and author Bob Tarte, every week on demand from PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Weldy, thank you so much for being with us. How about some of the more common exotic animals that maybe we're not even considering exotic anymore because so many people have them? How about those little red ear sliders? Are those good exotic pets for people to keep?
All of the little water turtles like the sliders are good pets. They're fairly easy to acquire. They're fairly inexpensive to acquire. And if you spend the time and money to build a proper enclosure, whether it's an outdoor pond or an indoor pond, you would or aquarium type setup, you can house them fairly well and minimize your problems, health problems and things like that.
I know there have been concerns with salmonella coming from these red ear sliders. They have to be a certain size. What are some of the other diseases that you can get from, say, a turtle or from some of these various reptiles?
Well, all of the reptiles can carry a host of bacteria, including salmonella. And we basically tell our clients that if you own a reptile, it carries salmonella, whether it tests positive or negative. If it tests positive, obviously it does. If it tests negative, it obviously didn't. It could be still positive because it's not necessarily shedding. And the smaller baby red-eared sliders that they stopped selling because in the salmonella was mainly, it's kind of a false sense of security because adult red-eared sliders can carry salmonella, so can iguanas and things like that. So you have to prepare, you have to make sure that people understand that hygiene between you and the animal is paramount in the survival of you when it comes to being not infected with these things. A lot of animals can carry diseases that are zoonotic that go back and forth between humans and animals. And so with reptiles and amphibians, I tell people that you don't drink the water, you don't play with them, and then eat your food. You know, you wash your hands, and you don't let your dog, you know, and your kids and stuff like that play and then come up and lick you guys or, you know, do things with you guys.
It sounds like we should be listening to what our mom always said, you know, wash your hands when you're done playing with the animals. So good advice. All right, what is a good first bird?
Good first bird. that's a tough question. But I think that people that have parakeets, the little budgies, and cockatiels, they're fairly good little birds, and they're inexpensive. The cockatiels, I think, have a few more color patterns and stuff that people tend to like more. I'm more of a natural color pattern person. I like the wild type cockatiels and parakeets. It's really hard to say that would be my first bird. I mean, some people like canaries, some people like finches. They all have good and bad, you know, things. Just like there's no good breed, you know, great breed out there that I would say, oh, gee, this is the best breed in the world, because every breed has a good point and a bad point on it. And I would look for what you're looking for in the bird. If you want one that's animated, or you want one that talks, or you want, and you don't mind spending a lot of money, or you want something that's inexpensive, that's just ornamental, that you don't want to hold, then that would drive you direct towards the species I think would be a good group for you to get into.
Okay, so how about if I want a snake? People love the snakes. What should they look for as that first snake, and what are some of the perils and pitfalls?
Obviously, big snakes can be a problem. When you get them little, they grow up, so you have to be prepared for that. If you want to buy a little South American boa or Burmese python, they're going to get big. Reticulated pythons seem to be coming up and then being common again, and those things can get up to, you know, 25 feet. So if you're looking for a snake, I would get one that is a colubrid type, the regular king snake, stuff like that. They don't require external heat as much. They're not as dependent on external heat as the boas and pythons are, and they don't get as big, and they can be fairly nice and easy to raise. So if I was going after a first-time snake, I would go after something like a corn snake or a king snake or a gopher snake, and there's a lot of those sold in the pet stores, so you don't have to capture them from the wild, that are in the pet trade, which probably make you a fairly good snake for a first-time person.
What are some of the health issues that the snake itself can have? And then are there zoonotic diseases that the snake can pass to the human?
The zoonotic things, same thing as salmonella and biting you. Those are probably the two most common ones that everybody jumps on. Probably 85% of reptile diseases that come into our hospital could have been prevented by better husbandry. So again, it goes back to proper care, feeding, and housing of the animal.
If you have one of these exotic animals that you've now said, you know, it really seemed like a great idea, but I am tired of this ball python that is now huge and it stinks and I have to get live rats to feed to it, I'm just tired. What am I going to do with it? What do you suggest then?
That's a tough question, because we end up with people that have small iguanas that get to be 5 feet long and they don't know what to do with it, and they have big pythons. And there are people on their websites that will take care of these unwanted animals, but they're few and far between. Most of those people you know, want you to find a home for it, but they don't want to give you any money to take care of it or feed it or house it. And so these people you know, end up abandoning them, which happens a lot, and the animal controls are full of some of these bizarre little exotic animals. And I think the best thing to do is you have to get on the internet and you have to search and you have to put in, you know, free to good home type signs, but consider going back to the pet stores and saying, you know, can you want this, you know, or can you buy this or something like that. When you have a big reptile that, you know, that you don't want, the whole idea is you get a pet, you understand that you're going to have the pet for the rest of its life. And just like when you get a dog, you get a dog for the rest of its life, and you don't get a dog as a whim for 2 years and then decide, oh, I'm going to find it a home and get rid of it. That's the wrong attitude. So when you get committed to these exotic animals, to have them, you think it all the way through to the death of the animal, natural death of the animal.
That is great advice. And can you touch a little bit on, all of a sudden, you know, I have that little red ear slider. How about if we just take it to the park, Johnny, and we'll let it go in that little pond, because, you know, they come from a pond. What's your view on that?
Well, if you fall into the state fishing games and game of fish things, is that you're not allowed to release anything that is not endemic back into the wild. And, you know, we're not supposed to play that game, because those animals, those sliders compete with our, we only have the western pond turtle here, and that turtle is in lots of ponds where there's other non-endemic species people have introduced in there. The downside is that those turtles that they introduce there carry diseases that those turtles can carry, like red-eared sliders have certain diseases, and snappers have certain diseases that are in them and don't bother them at all. But when you put them into a new population of animals that are that don't have those, like our pond turtles, then it wipes out all those pond turtles, as well as competing for the habitat and the food and the space that our pond turtles have. And that's why our pond turtles, you know, if you ask most Californians, they don't even know that we have one species of turtle that lives in our ponds, because they've never seen them, because they're outcompeted by the thousands of red-eared spiders and map turtles and false map turtles and alligator snappers and stuff that people dump into the ponds around here. So that is very, very bad advice, and it teaches your kids that the animal's disposable, and that's the wrong thing you want to teach your children. Again, it goes back to think it through. If a kid wants a little red-eared spider, you have to be prepared to keep it. My mountain king snake, this is a little side note here. I had a mountain king snake, an Arizona mountain king snake, that I owned for 32 years before it finally died. So some of these reptiles are pretty long-lived.
That is saying you did great care, 32 years. Congratulations. That is very long. I know that you've treated all these various creatures and people having these animals, bringing them into you. But you also have another sidelight where you do a lot of work for movies. Can you tell us a little bit about some of these various movies that you've been involved with, some of the animals? What's the biggest animal star that you've worked with?
Well, that's a hard question, because animal star, a lot of the stuff I did when the big movies was a while ago. And so Dreyfus, which was on Empty Nest, his name was Bear. I worked with Joel Silverman on that for a number of years. As Good as It Gets, the little Brussels Griffin. I worked with that dog, and the dog that was in Dante's Peak. I used to take care of that. The penguins on 51st Dates and Ace Ventura. I worked on Harry and Henderson's with a lot of the animals in that. The Dalmatians, 101 Dalmatians. There's a number of those animals that I've worked with, and so it's some of those animals. It's hard to know what was the best star.
What's been the most exotic animal that you've worked with in a movie?
In the movies, I like toucans. I think in George of the Jungle, I worked with the toucans in that. I think toucans are pretty bizarre and exotic little birds. So I'd probably say, and that and the penguins. I mean, I think those are the two most, the weirdest things I've ever had to work with. This hospital also has worked with the little monkey and the macaw in the Pirates of the Caribbean, too. I didn't do that work. Dr. Fisher did it here.
Wow, I think I'm going to have to come out and hang out at your place. It sounds like you have some really fun things walking through your door.
And once in a while, it gets exciting, so.
Well, we've been talking with Dr. Scott Weldy, a veterinarian who is definitely taking the James Herriot philosophy to heart. So taking care of large and small, great and teeny, from the hedgehog to the eagle to the penguin. Dr. Weldy, if somebody needed to get in touch with you so you could take care of their penguin, where would they call?
My hospital is Serrano Animal and Bird Hospital. It's in Lake Forest, and our phone number is 949-855-9744.
One more time, and that's Lake Forest, California.
It's Serrano Animal and Bird Hospital in Lake Forest, California. It's 949-855-9744.
Well, we hope that you've learned a little bit about exotic animals, that they can be a great addition to your home, but you do, as Dr. Weldy said, need to do your homework, think it through from the very beginning when they're cute and novel to the time when you've had that snake for 32 years. It's large, it's older, and it's just not maybe as exciting as it used to be, but it is your responsibility from beginning to end. Thank you so much for listening to me, Dr. Bernadine Cruz, on The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in next week when we'll be talking to another very interesting guest. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.